CliffCentral.com.
Hello, I hope you enjoyed our elaborate intro music. It is now on to the show. It is the 5th of September. This is the Gareth Cliff Show, and you're listening to a delightful collection of insights, information, all the latest from the news, the sport, and actualities. What is actualities here?
I don't know. I just know it's always used in broadcasting.
Yeah.
Actuality. That's actuality. A genre of something.
Actuality expert.
Let's call ourselves that. Yeah. Sounds very fancy.
I'll look it up tomorrow, then we can really open with it. It is Wednesday, and we've got a very interesting show for you today because... She is an uncle.
Oh, I was waiting for something else. Like, what? It's Wednesday. Is there a surprise? I don't know.
That's Wednesday.
Extra gourd coming in.
Extra gourd coming in.
Yeah, extra.
So, see, how did yesterday go? I know yesterday was a big day because, firstly, it was Beyonce's birthday.
Guys, if you let me just put a PSA out there. If you do not believe that God exists, well, proof that I have a niece born on Beyonce's birthday is proof enough.
We did say we were going to call your niece Cliff Yonce.
I don't know about that part of naming my niece, but we'll get to it in a second. But yes, yeah, after months and months of this pregnancy and my sister going through a lot, and over the past couple of days where really she was struggling and had to be hospitalized, it was... she was closely monitored by doctors and was always touch and go. But finally, the doctor said, you know what, for both the baby's safety and my sister's safety, we had to do an early delivery. My sister was 32 weeks along as of this week. And she gave birth to a bouncing, healthy baby girl, 10 fingers, 10 toes. Oh. And I'm that person who now gushes about my brand new little niece.
And you will. So if you follow Sierra on social media, you shall be seeing baby pictures.
I haven't posted just yet because
I should hope not. So yeah,
yeah.
So hasn't even been 24 hours.
No, even just yesterday, because I ended up even going into the theater with her. And nowadays, which is a surprise to me, but I understand it at the same time, the entire hospital crew will actually encourage you to take footage and take pictures.
Not like a hospital cameraman that's give the guy $200 and he's just there all day with the camera.
Well, look, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about that couple who's getting married and wanted a videographer to film their first night having sex. Hey, look, we live in a new age.
So I
have tons of pictures, tons of videos, but I think at this stage, babies all still look like little rats.
So, how traditional is your family?
So it's fine. In what way?
Because there's this thing, you know, in African families that when you have a baby, you have to wait for a certain time before you can share the pictures.
Oh, yes, yes. I know about that. I know, just is what it is with us. But yeah, it's going through seeing someone give birth has just changed how I viewed things all in all. Because firstly, this is the first time I actually experienced the day-to-day of someone being pregnant. Two of my sisters have been pregnant in the past and they lived in different cities while they were going through it. But now I actually got to see almost really a day-to-day occurrence of like, oh my gosh, like what's going on? Okay, you're growing now and then you're having this or you're craving that. And now experiencing her giving birth, I'm like, movies have lied to us. And yeah, if you need me to tell you the truth, look, call on third time Uncle Sia and I'll tell you the truth of what really goes on. So because it was an emergency delivery, we ended up having to opt for a cesarean section. So everything was scheduled. I was told to be at the hospital at a certain time and, you know, we would be going in at this hour. And as we did, everything was just on schedule. Everything was running according to order. They tell me, okay, go in there and these are your scrubs. By the way, I did take amazing selfies of me in scrubs.
So, you have to share those.
Dr. Sangredi. Yeah. Dr. Sangredi. Paid Dr. Sangredi to the selfie room.
That's the closest I'll ever get to being a doctor. But you put all of these scrubs on and they say, okay, cool, we'll go in 10 minutes. And the anesthesia walks in and she gets my sister all drugged up. And
she medicates your sister, not all drugged up.
You know,
it's in a frat party, so
it's always a sedation vacation. She's half in, half out. She was just smiling the entire way through because she was on a sedation vacation. And I think, like, within 20 minutes, the entire process was over. Well, that of just like opening her up, and then my niece coming out, and was an extra another 10 minutes of them sewing her back up. And within, yeah,
30 minutes. You finessed this story the least, huh? They drugged her up, and then they sewed her up, and they put it back in the production Hebrew.
Let me just say, this is the PG-13 family version of the story. I can go into extra details of, I love my sister, but I didn't think I loved her enough to smell her burning flesh.
Oh, dude.
I know. You see, that's why I don't want to get all gory. Yeah. Let me keep it that
way. You made it sound like a Joel. I was arriving, putting my coffee down. I'm like, actually getting drunk up and having a Joel. Like, this sounds like, make childbirth sound like a party.
But you really do think about it. They have to sear your skin open, and they use these hot instruments to burn this line into
you. No, man.
Yeah, so you don't actually want to be in a room and see
that. That took a turn.
See, but, I wanted to keep it very wholesome.
Ben was like, yeah, they were medicating her as opposed to like being drugged up and having a frat party. But some of those drugs they give you in hospital are a jewel.
Jeez.
Some of them are a jewel. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'm glad you can't get most of them, like, you know, outside of the hospital, because pethidine's fun, man.
You even know their names?
Yeah, because you could be like sitting there with pethidine. It's not just like a painkiller. It doesn't just like take away the pain. It makes you enthusiastic. So you could be like sitting there, and the doctor could be sawing off your leg below the knee, and you'd be like, you're so good at this. Like, you saw so well. I like you. Where did you learn sewing?
That explains a lot, because as we got in, I'd probably say a good 5 minutes into going into the theater room with my sister, she then called over one of the nurses and she said, look, can you plug my phone in? I'm like, plug your phone in where? And then she started opting for a specific playlist, and the team actually obliged. They started playing all her favorite music. Oh, so we were able to listen to music throughout the entire process. And we were just warned against one thing. The entire staff told us not to look up, because obviously with a cesarean section, there's now this little curtain between what my sister can see and the rest of her lower body, so that she doesn't see her body half open. And I was sitting on the other side of the curtain. I opted also not to see what is going on downstairs. But we were told not to look up at the lights in the room.
Here's some actual audio of yesterday.
What? Oh, really now? No.
It's a great song, actually.
Ben, it was a cesarean. There was no pushing. It was... That happened 7 months prior to last night. Let me just say that. But yeah, there
was Dr. Salt and Pepper in the house. Let's get this on the way.
They told us not to look at the lights.
Why?
Because the lights are reflective. So as we look up at the lights, you are then able to look. You're able to see what's happening right inside.
Shiny lights.
Human nature, what do you do when people tell you not to
look up at the lights?
No, I was like, damn it. I shouldn't have done that. But yeah, it was so easy. We're taking selfies, we're listening to music, we were just having a jaw. And then our baby was born.
Yeah.
Have you named her?
Look at you, was beaming. You're glowing so hard, it's almost hitting my eyes. I wish people could see Sia right now, those people listening. You're like... Literally, you need planets orbiting around you. You're such a sunshiny thing.
If you think I'm sunshiny with my sister being on so much medication, she did not doze off at all. I left hospital probably at like 9:30 last night, and she was still so happy and chirpy, and really was a proper drug-infused feeling, because by the time that I left, she started having these weird cravings. Like, she requested a bowl of ice to crunch on, and then she wanted like buffalo wings with a blue cheese sauce. I'm like, honey, okay, this seems like the munchies
just
to me.
Just been through the most.
Yeah, dude. If you're ever entitled to the buffalo wings with whatever sauce you want, it's then. But like, I've been in hospital a couple of times. I was in hospital for, I think, almost 2 weeks. That my appendix burst. So it's like many years ago.
I know, that is not easy.
So like, you know, like most people get it removed because it gets like, it starts to act up. When it actually bursts, they got to like do a lot of stuff, because you can get like all sorts of poisoning from it. And so it was pretty hectic. I was in hospital for like 2 weeks, and they kept opening me up. And I just remember I was kind of constantly on painkillers. So they would cycle you. I think it's 2 or 3 days that you stay on one painkiller, so that you don't become like dependent on it, or it doesn't start to like wear off and you need more. So they move you from like pethidine onto morphine, then like onto something else, I don't know, and then back again. So you kind of like, if you like, morphine just mongs you out. Like, you just pretty much just like, you're not very present. You're kind of awake, but not really. It's like anesthetic that halfway puts you to sleep. Whereas pethidine, like, makes you cheerful as. Ooh. So, yeah, I'm certainly not trying to get any of the listeners to go out there and find black market pethidine and become highly dependent on it, because that's what happens. You know, if you take it for more than a few days, it can become addictive.
Oh, geez.
But if you are in an unfortunate position to need medical grade painkillers and you have the choice of which ones to get, pethidine's a jewel.
Is this why doctors always working doubles? Because it just gets them close to the pethidine.
Man, I don't know if I could be trusted in the pethidine cupboard. It's a really good time.
Yeah, you think about how much goes on in those rooms that we don't know.
Nothing bad that's happening to you can bother you. Literally nothing. Yeah. You could just have had your arm eaten off by a lion and you'd be like, where's the cute lion? No. And there's no pain and you just think everything's great. And everyone's wonderful and they're helping you and you love them. It's a delightful world. Best friend. Yeah, exactly. Everyone wants to help you because of what the nice lion did.
Well done, sir. Well done. And obviously being a traumatic 2 weeks or so to get through it. So everyone's happy and healthy.
Yeah, nice, we nice knock on story. Wood and are just grateful. Baby has to stay in hospital for another month. Yeah, just in an incubator, just to make sure that all is well. But other than that, it really, not to sound all corny and nauseating this early in the morning, but it just makes you reassess a lot of things, makes you prioritize what's really important.
Yeah, sure.
As much as I binge and wince and moan about my family and how psychotic they are sometimes, you know, being all of us being together last night really mattered the most. As much as my mother was in town, but my mother being dramatic, she says, I can't do it. Like, what do you mean? You gave birth to four kids. She goes, I can't be in there. Like, yeah, you guys will call me when it's done. Like, okay, well, that's down. Because initially I wasn't even meant to be in the theater. And then my sister's fiance also.
You will never say no to a night of the theater.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're born for the theater.
I was worried that you'd pass out yesterday.
Yeah, because I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I also didn't think it was my place. Because I'm like, well, my sister's fiance is around. Why isn't he in there? And then he was like, no, that's it. I also can't do it. Blood. And then at the same time, my sister actually opted. She said, look, I love you and I love you enough to worry about our sex life one day. So I don't want you to see a whole typhoon aftermath down there. And you need to once again need to find that attractive. So he was banned. And then, yeah, I was like, I was the last one standing, I guess. So,
I don't know. I'd insist on my person being there when I'm giving birth.
Not to sound superficial, but I get what you were saying.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
I wouldn't want to see that.
You see, yeah.
But
yeah.
You made it.
No, but I mean, it's the process. I get it. The miracle of life. Hakuna Matata, all that kind of stuff. But I don't really want to see the nuts and bolts of that miracle.
I'm intrigued by this curtain idea because, like, I'd maybe okay on that other side. Like, I'll be on the hand-holding side where the human ends at the belly button and there's none of the stuff going on the other side. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean,
but I'll not also look at the light.
Yeah, I'd also be a hand-holder, but I'd literally be out, like, you know.
But, you know, even with a little curtain separating you, you can still make out exactly what's going on.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, when a doctor's on the other side of the curtain and having these extended arm movements, and then you get out of the corner of your eye, like a little glimpse of an intestine, you're like, no, come on.
But you see as well, like, guys, that's the thing. No matter how, like, oh, you should be there, you shouldn't be there.
Sorry.
It's an obligation. You made it. It's your duty. What you don't want is to be going through childbirth and getting all of that stuff that Sears described happening, and there's a dude fainting and literally vomiting next to you, like, and he's hurling on the floor and he's like crying and completely pale. Then they've got to get more nurses in because the dude is literally like passed out and he's in like anaphylactic shock.
And imagine if you're the woman who is being operated on and you have to worry about a spouse who is feeling lightheaded, you know. So I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Speaking of lighted, let's lighten things up a little bit from an intestine coming out. Kids asking adults why they give up on their dreams to have a child. No, that's not what they said.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Are your parents disappointed of you?
I'm with BuzzFeed and I'll be asking why people gave up on their dreams.
A scary child. Ooh.
Plays jazz well.
Yeah. kid music.
What was your dream job when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a chef.
Are you a chef now?
I'm a food studies major.
That makes no sense to me. What did you want to be when you grew up?
A taxi driver.
My dream job was being a lawyer.
What are you now?
Interaction design.
Are you a lawyer now?
I am not a lawyer now.
Do you even drive a car?
No, I cannot drive.
You're really bumming me out.
So, what was your dream job when you were a kid?
So, like most kids, I wanted to be an astronaut.
I wanted to be an astronaut.
Are you an astronaut now?
No, I'm actually a yoga teacher now. Like, I'm a yoga instructor.
So I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, I wanted to be an architect.
What does that even mean?
Architects would design buildings.
That's all I need to hear, sir. Okay. Why did you give up your dream?
I lost interest in what I wanted as a kid.
That sounds like an excuse.
I research Amish women and ultra-Orthodox women.
They're trying to put me asleep.
Why did you give up on your dream?
I didn't really give up on my dream. It just sort of changed.
So what was your dream job when you were a kid?
I wanted to be a dancer when I was a kid.
Are you a dancer now?
I am.
Congratulations, you did it.
Thanks.
Aww. Well, you know I'd be when you grew up, bird.
When I was a kid, I had a million dreams. One of them was to be a taxi driver.
So are you a taxi?
I was going to say, if this kid knew anything, she'd run away right now. This guy, ooh.
Taxi driver now?
I never did become one. It was a dream when I was much younger, and dreams change as you go through different things.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any other dreams?
I have a million dreams.
Yeah, he's creeping me out badly. Run.
Wow. I'm glad that you said that. It gives me more confidence.
And that kid was never seen again. But anyway, don't give up on your dreams, everybody.
What did that last dude look like?
He looked like he has a basement and a station wagon.
Ah, yes.
A station wagon that backs into the basement.
Yeah.
But how are you being Gord?
Extensive tools, despite never producing a piece of woodwork.
No, exactly. Gord, how have things been going your life?
Good, man.
You know, a week's a long time.
It is a long time. And I know because I saw on social media, and I did not get a chance to actually listen to the podcast. I know you guys had some action. I saw you karate'd the door.
Jeez.
That was quite cool. I see GC is like overseas and living the fab life. He's in Germany.
Central worldwide.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm good, man. I took it really easy this last week. Had a chilled weekend and just been working and doing some really bizarre voiceovers and doing my corporate stuff when I'm not
bizarre?
Doing that. Yeah, it was quite fun. Like, I do voiceovers and it's not really like my main gig, and it's also completely unpredictable. I got really cool agents, and so they bring in most of my work. I bring, obviously, some I get directly, but like it's really random. Different ad agencies usually like making ads. It could be anything, like literally anything. So I was a day before yesterday, I was with this other really funny guy called Ash. They sometimes put you in the booth separately, and they sometimes put you and the person you're dialoguing with together in the booth, sometimes like on one mic. And I was an Italian dog that was in the mafia. It was really funny. I can't give too much about the ad away because it's not out
dog
yet.
In the mafia.
Yeah, yeah. I can't give too much about the ad away yet. But I was basically like, "No, dog father," and like, "There's no respect, dog father." And then you know, like, then the next day I was doing an ad where I was a human organ, like not a sexual one, but a human body part that's like fed up of being mistreated. And then like it was just, yeah, total chaos. Like the client arrived late and wanted a completely different thing, and I'd done it a million different ways and they didn't know what they wanted. So, and then later on I did like full voiceover DSTV voice, which was like talking about the Comic-Con, and I'm pretty sure hopefully no one's going to sue me for spilling the beans on that one, but it was like, "Come to Comic-Con on 14 and 16 September.
Yes.
We're giving away free tickets at Africa's first ever comic festival." Da 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 da. And I just thought to myself, like, yeah, see, I do some weird shit, man. In between, like, a really corporate gig that's happening most of the time. So that's me. I've been working and taking it pretty easy. I started diet number 755 for the year. I'm like three days into that.
What does that entail?
I just, you know, I fell off my diet, so I decided to get back on it. And the main reason I fell off this diet, I don't know, it's not an excuse, like, it's okay that I fell off it, because just the thing that killed my momentum was that my smoothie maker broke.
And that's the start of the day.
Yeah, and also like that was becoming a big thing for me. Like make a smoothie at night, put it in the fridge. It became like I'd done it for like a month and a half. It had been working nicely for me, and I really like was enjoying it. And my machine broke, and then it wasn't. I'd lost the packaging and the slip, and I had to get a hold of the people at Russell Hobbs, and then they were quite polite about it, and they were like ordering me the part that I needed. It should have been under warranty to just swap it out, but that's my fault. And so like life, you know, totally like unpredictable and not personal life happens to you, and suddenly like. You don't have a smoothie machine, but it's taking like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and you still haven't gone. And then they say, okay, the part's at the factory in town, and you don't go. So I just bought a new one, and that's been my main thing for this week. I've been back at the gym for a couple of days. I'm feeling pretty sore because of it, but it's nice to be back and living my best life. How you been?
Yeah, good. I've been here. I've been pretty frequent.
I've seen that, yeah.
We've had Nola in studio because whenever we talk to her, she's on that really crap mic. So
it always sounds like this.
And then there's
and then she has to beat the thing up.
That's
I have to punch it.
But she sounds in the other room. Like that's what that mic does.
The building. It's like, what's Nola doing in the building across the road?
It's like ironic that after years of the phone sucking, now like the person controlling the phone, the phone sounds better than the person driving the
exactly
phone.
A little bit. Nola, we have an update on your brother. Is he doing better? Is he back?
Oh my god, yes.
Is he back in the Eastern Cape?
Out of hospital. I took him. I literally transported him to East London so that he can be there with my mother.
Wow, yeah, because that was the last update we had from you.
Yeah, I remember. We haven't spoken about it. Yeah, so he had to go and get his stitches taken out. He's still recovering. He can walk.
Okay.
Which is good.
That was going to be my next question because there was that sort of like fear. That
I was
because
very
of the,
worried about that, yeah.
Because of the injury near his spine, that was going to be an issue.
He can walk, but the internal injuries, I think, are what's, hectic at the moment. I can sleep now knowing that he's with my mom.
Well, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone is present, accounted for, healthy, additional family members. Okay.
Relatively speaking, yeah.
Big relief. Okay, so onto some bad news, of course. South Africa is now in a recession. Well, surprise, surprise.
Yay.
I mean, it's like officially been declared.
Finance Minister Nhlanhla Nene says, government didn't see recession coming.
Isn't that comforting to know that our finance minister...
Even when you face Dale Steyn, there's a run-up that you can see for a while. Like, look at that. Who's that tall, lanky man with an angry expression running toward me? And what's he doing with the red thing in his hand?
I mean, like, obviously it led to huge amounts of decline in agriculture. I wonder why. Transport and the retail sectors. So how do you not see this coming? This is the funny thing. Like Praveen Gordhan and Nhlanhla Nene, everyone's like, oh, these are the guys that are really good. No, they were just the ones who were the least shit under Zuma. Come on. This is just so sad. So the Rand blew out against the dollar yesterday.
I saw the euro price yesterday as well. It wasn't great.
Yeah, just all just blowing out. So Tuma Mina and all that kind of stuff. Happy days.
Hey, but Tuma Mina, where? Please. We Tuma you to just sort things out, please.
Well, unfortunately, Cyril is hell-bent on perpetuating the sort of system of cronyism that the ANC has become. So this is what happens when you hire your mates and your cousins and your second cousins.
My mates would at least do a decent job of some shit.
Like, because you got some nice mates.
If you if we took over like the space agency and we were supposed to handle the rockets to space, we'd probably not manage that well, but we'd try.
Yeah,
and we might outsource. We might use some of the like wealth to outsource professionals, and we'd be cool. We'll do like very little and sign checks and keep some of the money, and you guys do the work. We wouldn't just not bother. Like, we'll send this thing up. It blew up.
It's accountability. Sorry, not accountability.
That's the problem with trying. You know, you say you try, and I'm pretty sure where they are, that's what they think they're doing, but because we aren't there, so we wouldn't know.
I'm pretty sure a lot of people in government know they're not really trying.
I think they're knowing that they're not doing what they can. They're just feeding themselves, and unfortunately, that's what it comes down to, is that there's a certain amount of people who are really benefiting from all of this. And I tell you what, it's not you and I and other people out there.
But they're also like, you got to also say there probably are those that are trying and are like doing their best in spite of the shit going on.
No doubt.
We've
had this conversation before, also with the police force. They get a lot of stick, and you know, you've always been
quite
adamant.
Really good ones.
There are really good ones, and we can't blanket them. Look,
and total dog vomit ones as well.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not saying they're all great. Dog vomit.
Look, generalizations are very, very dangerous things, and I always hate that. It's like when people talk about black people or white people and they blanket everyone the same thing. It's annoying. but this is a collective fuck up.
Yeah, as a group, they definitely shit.
This is a collective fuck up of government. It's the first time since 2009.
The post office doesn't work. Nothing works.
2009, Gord. 2009. That was the last time we were in recession. And yes, there's always other factors from the outside, like the oil price, international trade wars, all this kind of stuff. We've seen this kind of stuff recently. Obviously, because we are so thrust upon the news nowadays, we all become experts.
I think the 2009 one actually was to do with the American stock market vibes. The mortgage repayments and the futures collapse.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was a lot of skullduggery globally. So, but this recession here, junk status. If that wasn't a wake up, didn't see it coming, finance minister. This is kind of that hangover again. It's like, well, 3 bottles of tequila, didn't see the hangover coming.
This is, for me, I just shake my head and I really don't understand what goes on. I'm not saying I condone politicians lying to us or whatever the case is, but I never understand how you sit in these rooms where decisions are made and a finance minister is allowed to say something like, I did not see the recession coming. Who thought that was a good idea for the minister to say that? Like, what? I'm not saying lie, but at least try to make us have faith in you. Because right now, by saying something like this, you are showing us point blank that you are not capable of being in this position. At least say, my dear South Africans, I have been trying, my team and I have been working, but these are tough times we have, and we are officially in a recession. Telling us straight up, yo, I didn't see this coming.
Just like, say your projections were wrong or something, or incorrect, just so we know you're doing something.
It's just like, I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but I'm sure we've all seen now in the news how the SABC is in these shambles of not being able to pay their various production companies who commission and produce their shows.
So they can't pay their cousins.
Their cousins, okay. So some of the shows have actually halted production because they are saying, well, if there's no money, we literally cannot carry on shooting or whatever the case is. But meanwhile, they've been able to bring the Bold and Beautiful star to South Africa. And they say, oh, no, we are not funding her trip at all. But some of the top execs at the SABC were seen at the airport, pricking her up, taking her to spa treatments, traveling the entire country with her. So I'm saying, like, who really makes these decisions? Who do you think you're fooling with these decisions? You know, and how do you expect us to have faith in you when you do things like these? It's just stupid, in my opinion.
So she's visiting for how long?
She's been here for the past week, and she's still doing some press this week as well.
And she's probably going to leave sometime this week.
Yeah, but no. The SABC is not funding it.
What about the shows that have been commissioned to run for years?
For example, the biggest soapy in this country, and soapies still get the massive audiences, on SABC 1 called Uzalo, and it's filmed in Durban. It has massive, massive ratings. And for that, you would think that's your priority and your cash cow, SABC, but they stopped production, I think, like 2 weeks ago, and they only just got some cash last week. But I have some friends who are on various television productions as well who say, things are looking bad, and they just aren't getting cash.
Just try work hard in your own capacity, live within your means, and just tell anybody who's state or government to piss off. I know we go on about this a lot in the show, but come on, we can't have any more of this. It's driving into the pit toilet of their existence, that we mustn't go with them. So if you work for SABC, I'm sorry. My thoughts and prayers are with you, but it's only going to get worse. And if you believe that going to political rallies is going to change your life, well, then maybe you deserve.
They've been hard to get paid by for a long time.
It's because guys like you aren't paying your TV license score.
Yeah, of course, that's why.
It's the right thing
to do. Anyway, we need to get to the 5 things we need to know today. We could go all. I just want to tell you that we are officially in a recession, and politicians also don't know what they're doing, but that's nothing new to you. What is happening in the 5 things outside of what we've spoken about today?
Well, Ben, firstly, in the 5 things that you need to know, just to conclude on the story that you brought up. Yes, this is what the finance minister Nhlanhla Nene has said around the recession. And he continues to say another nail in his coffin, really, saying that while the government is not entirely surprised, it is disappointed in the numbers. So
I'm not surprised, I'm disappointed.
Imagine. Earlier on yesterday, Stats South Africa announced the economy had contracted by 0.7%. in the second quarter, following a contraction of 2.6% in the first quarter. So the largest negative contributors to growth in GDP were agriculture, transport and trade. And speaking in Beijing, of all places, so while everything burns here in SA, you're abroad, on the sidelines of the forum on China-Africa cooperation, Nene says government didn't see the technical recession coming. His direct quote is, "We didn't think we would have the second contraction. We were hoping we would have had a moderate recovery." But he says government is working on a plan to finalize the structural reform package. Here's some hope. He says the reform package that comes out of the cabinet process is also in the pipeline. Nene says he doesn't think that the latest figures have something to do with the current heated debate around the expropriation of land without compensation, but rather says that government can't deny that the VAT increase and fuel price hikes have had an impact on the numbers. What's that iconic quote we got from last week? Do you even know what VAT is, bro?
Yeah, exactly.
VAT, bro.
VAT, bro.
I forgot about VAT, bro.
Well, sticking to some stories happening in SA, around 100 people have sadly been injured in a Johannesburg train crash. This was after yesterday 100 people were injured in a morning train collision between two passenger trains at the Elof extension in Selby in Johannesburg. ER24 paramedics and other emergency services arrived on the scene to find both trains upright and on the tracks. An ER spokesperson, Russell Meering, said in a statement, numerous people had already climbed off the train and were walking around on the scene. Emergency services set up a triage area and began to assess the passengers. Approximately 100 patients were assessed and found to have sustained minor to moderate injuries, and no serious injuries or fatalities were found. The patients were treated for their injuries and thereafter transported by several services to nearby hospitals.
Sure.
I don't mean to really go off on a bit of a sad tangent, but if we're sticking to disasters, a typhoon has killed 9 people in Japan, and boats have now started moving tourists from a flooded airport. This powerful typhoon killed at least 9 people in western Japan, and an airport company started to transfer some 3,000 stranded passengers by boats. This is what the public broadcaster NKH said yesterday, and more than 1 million homes were without power. Jebi, or Swallow in Korean, was briefly a super typhoon and is the most powerful storm to hit Japan in 25 years. It follows heavy rains, landslides and floods and record-breaking heat that killed hundreds of people this past summer. About 3,000 tourists stayed overnight at Kansai Airport in the heavily populated south-central area of Japan's mainland, Honshu. Now, television footage showing people lining up to buy food and drinks at a convenience store in the airport as well has been shared. This is after airport officials began transferring the stranded passengers to nearby Kobe Airport by high-speed boats on Wednesday morning. This is all according to NHK as well. In sticking to the fourth story that you need to know this morning, former Steinhoff CEO Marcus Huerster will make his first official public appearance.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. Since his abrupt resignation in December last year. And it's all over accounting irregularity when today he'll appear in Parliament. Last week, an agreement was reached between lawyers for Huerster and Parliament for him to appear after a subpoena was issued to him by the Standing Committee on Finance in August. Huerster has not spoken to media about what transpired at Steinhoff since he stepped down as CEO early in December of 2017. In a short WhatsApp message to colleagues shortly after he stepped down, he said it was time to, in quotes, move on and take the consequences of my behavior like a man.
Walk like a man, talk like you, whatever, dude.
It's like the subtle sexism in that, like an adult, perhaps.
Yeah, or like a responsible business person. Just remember that this guy isn't the reason that we are in a recession. He's just a crook. The crooks of SA, the ones that run the place, are the reason we're in a recession. So it's never just muddle this up, because you can choose to be a victim of Steinhoff. You can't choose to be a victim of the country.
Just thought I'd clarify. Take it like a man.
Take it like a man.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Well, why is it taking you 9 months to take it like a man? Have you been questioning your gender? Hey, Mr. Like a Man?
And man, finally man. Now agreeing to be in Parliament. Oh, well, let's see how that goes today. And then in the last story that you need to know this morning, just following up and sadly concluding the story that we've briefly been touching on this week on the show and also that has been in the media over the past couple of weeks. It's the abduction of the missing schoolboy Miguel Lowe. Well, sadly, condolences from the Sydney community flooded on social media yesterday as news broke out and confirmed that the body discovered in a shallow grave in Phoenix was that of the missing schoolboy Miguel Lowe. Police and private security guards chasing armed robbers through a bush in Phoenix on Monday stumbled across the body of a young boy by chance. While police have not yet officially confirmed that the body's Miguel, several people close to the family and relatives took to social media to confirm the news that nobody wanted to hear. Kevin Lowe said this to his nephew, saying, "Rest in peace, my nephew," and he wrote this on his Facebook page. And several friends responded with messages of condolences. One person writing, "This is so heartbreaking. I just cannot understand such evil towards an innocent soul." And another family member writing, "Our kids are not safe. R.I.P. Miguel. My sincere condolences to you, Kevin, and the family."
It's a very South African story that the body of a boy abducted by some psycho was discovered while police were chasing armed robbers.
Man. That shit sadly does happen bloody everywhere, and it's, I don't know, it's just some weird, like, malfunction in the brain. I don't know, it's like goes against all of human nature. It goes against all of human nature to kill another person, but we can be conditioned over time to override that and it's just like it's the most unnatural thing. It's just there's no way to understand it, and I think that's also what makes it so bloody horrible. Moving right along.
Yeah, it is. Sierra, those are the five things you need to know.
Yes, they were, Ben.
All right. Well, we spoke about obviously the recession, the rand blowing out. If you were to like buy a euro today, saying, "Ah, oh, today's a nice day to buy a euro," well, it'll cost you $17.73, $19.67 for a pint.
Yeah, I actually spent a euro or two yesterday. I spent a handful of euros yesterday, and I was thrilled to know that they cost even more than normal.
Yeah.
And they went up from, I think, about, they went up by about a rond, give or take.
Well, it'll take 15 rond 29 to buy a US dollar. And just the extra salt in the wounds there, 11 rand for an Aussie dollar. One Australian dollar will cost you. Into the sports. This weekend, the Springboks will be taking on. Springboks are taking on the Australians.
So you can still get some Brisbane. Venezuelans.
We can get some Venezuelans.
Okay.
1 rand will get
those cheap. Are getting cheaper all the time, so don't worry. Buy that. If you're looking to buy lots of currency, buy the Venezuelan.
1 rand will get you 73 trillion Venezuelans. Anyway, we must get onto the sport now because economics is too depressing right now.
Please say the sport's less depressing, Ben.
Well, Gord, I'm going to go with you. Sure. Starting with rugby, the Bok team will be announced tomorrow. So there's, are there changes afoot? People are saying that maybe Elton Judge should come back. Andre Pollard's had his chance and he hasn't really done anything with it. But that is kind of like replacing Klanene with Praveen Gordon or just average for average. I don't think this is going to be a way forward. No respect to either Pollard or Janchis, but neither of them have covered themselves in much glory. So it's just, it seems like a non-event to me. At the same time, you can't have everything relying on the fly half. The forward pack's also going to get the job done. And I think the Boks really know that because there's all this talk about them having tough practices and getting really physical and blah, 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 blah. But now, do you drop Malcolm Marks? Because yeah, you can't miss your lineup jumpers. Set pieces in Mendoza, in Argentina, were absolutely diabolical. Bongi Mbonambi has done nothing wrong whenever he's played for the Boks, so there is that call. But Malcolm Marks, of course, when on his day, he is the best in the world. You can't dispute that. You can't even go into a disagreement around that. This guy is one of those players that other teams cuck themselves for. That is a rugby term, of course.
Scientific rugby term.
Scientific rugby term. Malcolm Marks makes Oaks cuck themselves. So it's tough to call, but you know, Rusty Rasmus, this is what he does. He's a professional rugby person, so he'll know what calls to make. And he'll make that call tomorrow, and hopefully that team will then translate all these tough practices and all these tough calls to a match-winning performance in Brisbane on Saturday, 12 o'clock.
Sure.
SuperSport.
That's quite an uphill. It's a big challenge, man.
It really is good. Prior to that, you'll get to see the All Blacks beating Argentina this week, which is cool. If you're, yeah, It's what you want to go for. But yeah, tennis right now, of course, is the biggest story. I don't often say that because the US Open, which is like the least of all the majors. But Nadal and Thiem, they're currently fighting it out. Thiem won the first set 6-0. Nadal came back 6-4, 7-5. They're currently locked at 6-6. Now, yesterday, Roger Federer lost to that Aussie guy, Milman. Yeah, so now Milman will take on Djokovic. And then Nishikori will take on Cilic. And then Isner, well, he lost to Del Potro. So that is how your men's draw is looking. Sloane Stephens, the defending champions, out. Savastova beat her 6-2, 6-3. Serena Williams, though, she's still going strong. She beat Pliskova, the eighth seed, 6-4, 6-3. So it'll be Savastova versus Williams in your semifinals of the women's there. And then Suarez Navarro will take on Madison Keys. And then Osaka will take on Serenko. That is the tennis for you, Gord. That
yeah. Tennis. I've heard of maybe six of those people. Who do you think's going to win that?
The person who beats... let's move along. So Nike or hot water, or are they?
Is that an I don't know or I don't care or it's too hard to say?
Gord, tennis is tennis. Like, it's very open.
I was just curious, like I said. I don't know who most of those people are, so I'm interested to know who's the big dog in the yard at the moment with that draw.
Well, let's think about it. It's a good question because, you know, Djokovic isn't the big dog. Nadal's obviously being pushed all the way here by a team.
Federer
is out. Cilic is fine. Del Potro is through. Yeah, you roll the dice in that one. I reckon the betting odds are going to be quite interesting. But Nike have done, Nike have been Nike, really. So, you know, Serena Williams had that whole cat suit at the French Open, and then they were like, oh, disrespectful to the game. Or they said, it's disrespectful to the game, however they said it. Well, now they came up with this really great campaign, is that you can take a hero, superhero out of a clothing, but you can't take the superhero away kind of thing. But now they've used Colin Kaepernick, who, of course, was the guy who took a knee, and he's like the shamed...
With the dude with the big fro.
Yeah, who wouldn't stand during the national anthem. Of course, he's become this polarizing figure in
NFL,
America.
NFL dude.
The NFL guy, yeah. So Nike have now used him as his face, the same kind of ad. It's like, you know, black and white, really emotive ad, and it says, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. And of course, Colin's now put that onto Twitter, hashtag just do it. And people are losing their minds, Gord. Their minds. So what they're doing is people are now posting pictures on the internet of them burning their Nike stuff.
Oh,
so
God.
There's like burning Nike shoes.
But hey, you know, like this is a global market. So for every like American that now burns their Nike stuff, it's just free advertising for everyone else that's going to go, I'm going to buy that stuff because they stand for something.
Well, look, we all know the political landscape with the right and the left and how America have gone about this whole thing. And then obviously there's the touching on the Black Lives Matter. There is a shitstorm of things around Trump. So now this Nike campaign, I mean, this is what Nike do. Nike have been shitstirrers from the day, they're unapologetically so.
They're not, I mean, in my mind, they're not huge shitstirrers. They're not like one of those brands that deliberately shocks people. I always find their advertising quite like emotive. It's all about like, get up and do it, don't give up, everyone's a hero. I mean,
if you look, they sponsor Oscar Pistorius, Lance Armstrong, there was a guy that had dog fighting in his house.
But none of those people were people where they knew that the controversy was like, that all came out after. They just backed the wrong horse. I mean, Oscar was the hero of the universe and turned out to be a murderer.
They definitely liked a bit of edge. So that's what they go for. And that's how, I mean, just do it's their slogan. This is how they got to where they are.
It's a bold step, this.
People buy Nike stuff because they want to be slightly edgy. Otherwise, they'll go for something German.
Yeah.
Simple as that. So, obviously, you've got people who support Trump and are burning all their shit. Yes, okay, I know that's generalization. Not everyone is burning their stuff. Is potentially a Trump person. But now they're burning the stuff with hashtags like, I stand for our flag. Or I'm a patriot, or I stand for the anthem. And people are like, the funny thing is they're wearing shorts or a shirt or socks, and they cut the Nike off. So now they just got these cut pieces of.
They need their gear, but they don't want it, so they can't burn it, but they don't want to represent for Nike, so they're just removing the branding.
They're just cutting away the tick. So there's guys with like shorts, but now the one leg is like this huge chunk off because they want to cut off the brand out of solidarity for
their
That's silly.
It's stupid in the first place, and I mean, I work in branding and marketing, so I can't like knock it too much. I understand that like there's an you're buying an emotive response to a product, but at the end of the day as well, it's like it's really stupid to care that it's got like a little mark on it that takes it from being worth $100 to $1,000. It's all just like layers of bullshit within bullshit. Nothing real is actually happening here. I mean, the dude is protesting something pretty real. I think it's cool of Nike because they obviously knew this is exactly the backlash they were going to get.
Look, I can't say I care enough about Colin Kaepernick. I've said before many times, anthems are stupid. They're very old songs. They're very uninteresting. And I think this whole monotony of regurgitating the lyrics before a football or any kind of match is just stupid.
Yeah, tying nationalist politics into a sporting event.
Let's move on. Blind faith in anything is stupid. Anthems are dumb.
I mean, it makes sense to me. And again, I'm sure you want to immediately move on. Just quickly, though, it makes sense to me in international events. I'm not saying I love it and yay, definitely keep anthems. I'm just saying it makes some sense if you have like countries playing each other at something to sing the anthems before the game.
As to the pomp and ceremony.
Perhaps. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that makes sense. But in NFL and baseball and all of that, basketball, whatever, they sing it before the start of every match. And it's like this town versus that town. So that's dumb. I mean, who cares?
It is dumb. If it's the Olympics and you've got three guys from a variety of places around the world and you raise the flag, and yeah, it's a proud national moment because you are there to represent your nation.
Exactly.
When you are there for the Seattle Seahawks or the Milwaukee Trailblazers, or even now in the Varsity Cup, you're playing for like Vitz versus Marty's or something, shut the hell up with the anthem. I'd rather have you play Christina Aguilera's Dirty.
What the 2001 is going on?
That's a cool song. But they don't do it in the Premier League and in others
because they're adults
in football leagues.
They're adults. It's a business. Imagine the Premier League have to start every single day with God Save Our Queen. Well, none of the players would know the anthem because none of them are from England. Anyway, so that's, well, look at me getting onto a rant about Colin Kaepernick. I don't think it's that important, really. I mean, this whole thing, make a stand, do good, whatever you need to do, just grandstand, who cares? I mean, really, just live your life. That's his life, good on him. If that's going to make you cut your own clothing, then you're a dick.
Yeah.
Really? These pictures of people with cut socks and like, can you imagine like that? Yeah, I was on Tinder the other day. I didn't see much, but then I saw the guy who cut the Nike off his shorts, and we're dating now. I mean, this is the kind of guy I want about.
I want a shorts cutter.
Yeah,
I just want someone who stands for something, believes in things.
There was such a boring date, and then he went to Twitter. He saw what happened with Colin Kaepernick, and he burned his Nikes, and that's it. Now we're married now.
Well, like if you see someone, you're walking in the street, and you see a stranger, and he also has cut Nikes, you can like do the chest bump.
What do you do? You get,
like
two guys.
Hey, bro.
Yeah. Bro, I feel you.
Yeah,
feel you,
do
bro.
Like the raised fist salute.
Yeah, screw those guys. No. I'm not racist, but screw those black guys. No, but people in these anyway, to adult things again. The Ryder Cup. America has named their team. Strong as fuck, this team, is what Jim Furyk almost said, but he refrained, because he's not like me. He's governed by many
things.
What he wanted to say, but didn't. So, this is America's team. They've added Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. Duh. I mean, if you look at the standings, they're actually 10th, 11th as it is. And then Bryson DeChambeau, who is just been winning everything, so he's won twice in the FedEx Cup in the last 2 weeks. Biggest form player in the world right now, he's gone in. So, there we go, 12 players. All very, very exciting. Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Webb Simpson, Bubba Watson. You throw out the names. Tiger, when he came back from injury, said, because he was already the vice captain, which means you don't play, you just stand there, you wear glasses and look mean. But Tiger said, like, I'd love to play, and I'm aiming to play. And here he is, he's playing. How about,
wasn't that good for a while, and now he's making like a heroic comeback in that, because I'm like a layperson when it comes to golf, but yeah, so Tiger's like sorting it all out, and then, but I didn't know that about the vice captain. They seriously have like an honorary member who's
They have like a support team essentially, so because the matches in the Ryder Cup are so, like there's so much on every single match, you'll have vice captains that will follow certain groups, so what you'll do is they'll give information or give advice around how games are going, or different strategies. It is the most fascinating of golf events. It really is, because you've got 12-man teams. You play foursomes and four balls, so that's the first 2 days. And the last day, you play singles, man-to-man, toe-to-toe kind of match play. And then, obviously, there's the team room. So
man-to-man, toe-to-toe.
But can the vice-captain be compelled to play if something goes wrong? No, okay.
If a guy gets injured, then the other guy's gentleman agreement's taking place, and someone else, the other team, also has to sit out. It really is amazing. Today, Thomas Bjorn will also be saying that his team is strong as fuck. Well, that's what he'll want to say. Because right now, he's got Francesco Molinari, Justin Rose, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Alex Noren, and Thunder Bear Olsson. They're all his automatic picks. He now needs to make his wild card picks, and he'll do it today. So I'll tell you about it tomorrow. That's how things work here. That's pretty much all you need for sport today. So much, so much coming this weekend.
You're excited as, I can tell. Rugby's back. You're lighting up about the golf.
Oh, God. The Ryder Cup's like, it's like, it's it. And a while ago, I made bets that America going to win. So they better win.
Yeah. Because you report on some sport with this, like, ah, it's fuckery. And tennis, yeah. These guys are going to do this, and it's going to be a screw up. And you can watch the All Blacks. Like fist the Argentinians if that's what you're into, whatevs. And then it's golf, and little Ben's face just goes all aglow.
It's special. It's special. Good. You know, this week it was National Golf Day. Yeah,
I didn't know there was a day for that.
Yeah, it was Monday.
Golf doesn't need a day. It's like making a national sleeping day or a national like watching TV series day. That shit markets itself.
All right, on to Said by Sia with Sia Sangweni.
Actually, I'll defend Gord because you had that coming. You asked him about.
Yeah. Love it when Ben's in charge.
The shade.
He's got a technique of turning me down. One motion.
All right, Sia, what we got?
What disco ball did you hatch from, anyway? Ben, this is a moment. Once again, sport is being highlighted and said by Sia.
Look at that. Look at me.
I know.
Me rubbing off on you.
This is happening. This is the closest I'll ever get to knowing about sports. But I just thought, look, it's an inspiring story and it's another congratulatory moment for a South African who's doing awesome, awesome things. And this time around, it is a young South African boy who has been signed to Arsenal. Did you hear about that?
I did not.
His name is...
But then again, Arsenal do need fresh talent. In fact, they're signed
South African boys. Is he a defender?
Is
he taller than 5'3"?
You're also asking for too much now. I just know the heartwarming story. I don't know stats.
I bet you he's not a defender. I bet you he's a small, injury-prone, fleet-footed attacking player.
I don't know what the 4-1-1, the defender striking analysis.
4-4-2.
To know the 4-1-1 is like to know the news. Okay, 4-4-2 is the formation.
4-1-1 on the 4-4-2.
Got you, Gord. Proves how much about sports I know.
Who is this kid?
His name is Jaden Editiba, and he's landed a contract with what he describes as his dream team, Arsenal. He's a young football star. He first attended a 5-week trial in the UK, and 2 weeks ago he scored the offer, which he and his family immediately accepted. Now, Jaden is originally from Nigeria, and his family have previously lived in the UK, but they've now been calling Sunningdale and Cape Town home for the longest of time. But it seems they'll now have to trek back to England for good. Now, there you go, Gord. He's a striker. He's a young striker.
Obviously. Yes. Well, they can use those, I guess.
He's been playing soccer since he was 3 years old. He actually first played for Sunningdale FC and later joined the SuperSport United Soccer School in the southern suburbs. And he just says that he wants to thank his parents for this, and he's truly, truly happy. He's currently in grade 5 and he hopes to play for Arsenal's first team someday. He says that he trains 3 times a week at the academy, and then he has a match day over the weekend, and soccer is just something that he absolutely loves. He says, "The amazing thing is I've always been an Arsenal fan, and I'll work hard every day to make the first team." Jaden says, now that he's already moved to the UK, says that he misses South Africa's sunny weather, but hopes, and this is why I bring it up this morning, his story will inspire others. He says that both his idols, Cristiano Ronaldo and Alex Iwobi, are his heroes. Did I pronounce it correctly? Iwobi?
Yeah, Ronaldo, yeah.
No, Alex Iwobi, yes, Iwobi, yes, thank you. Ronaldo, he says he looks up to him because he works hard, and Iwobi because he was at the Arsenal Academy at the age of 7 and now plays for the first team. His message to everyone is, don't be afraid to dream big, and that's what my dad always tells me. Then work hard as you chase that dream. His proud father echoed those sentiments. So I just thought it was so, so cute. This little grade 5 pupil is now making his dreams come true. And that is your Said by Sia for this morning.
Very nice. Yeah, that is a lovely story. And that is a lovely hour of the Gareth Cliff Show without Gareth Cliff. But he'll be back next week. If you missed anything, then catch the full podcast on cliffcentral.com.
Catch us on the site. How about that?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So,
did you need a moment to process that?
What is this?
Are you done with a Cash Me Outside? How about that? Okay, I'm hip to the memes.
You are on fire today.
All right, everyone, just settle down. Settle down.
It's getting too rowdy.
Okay.
Too much of a jewel this
Speaking
morning.
Of CliffCentral.com, of course, there is the best in audio entertainment for your day-to-day needs or your any interests. I mean, Smart Money, for instance, is a series of financial tips for different life stages. Maya Fisher-French speaks to various experts as they help us find answers to pressing financial questions, such as financial wellness, saving for retirement, making sure you have the correct healthcare, navigating the gig economy, saving for a millennial perspective, How getting married affects you financially, and more. Tough sentence. Smart Money is brought to you by Discovery, getting your money right for your life. The show plays out every Wednesday at 9 a.m., so that will be today in about 2 hours' time if you're listening live. And all 12 episodes of the podcast are available on cliffcentral.com, on the Cliff Central app, and anywhere you get your podcast. We're not particular where you get it. We put great content out for you to enjoy as you please. And those are your different channels. So, yep, Smart Money today is the day. Otherwise, all of it, you can binge it like Netflix. Just go on to cliffcentral.com. It really is a great website. Gord, when last did you go on to cliffcentral.com and binge on Netflix, on podcasts?
I actually am overdue. I really want to listen to the show yesterday because I saw, like I said, I saw all the social media posts and the little video clip and whatever. And I was like, yeah, I want to know what happened yesterday with the kicking of the door. Obviously, you guys have gone through it in great detail. So I'm actually going to do that as soon as possible. I do like a bit of a podcast.
You want to know what door is?
Nice, yeah. CliffCentral.com.